create the flame of chaos in an attempt to make anew the first flame. But chaos is unpredictable and cannot be controlled forever. It wasn't long before she lost control, and the cataclysm stormed across Izalith. Within this storm, the flame molded the bed of chaos, a seedbed that gave birth to my kind, and laid waste to the denizens that dwelled nearby, consuming them, disfiguring them. When the dust settled, only the ruins of Izalith remained. And atop those ruins, we built an empire, ruled by chaos, the true flame of this world. We cannot be defeated. Though countless kings and their armies would wage war upon us, they would all fail and burn. Our empire would stand the test of time. We are chaos. We are ruin. We are demons.
So, we all know the story of how the demons came to be. The Witch of Izalith attempted to make a new first flame, and it went south very quickly. The flame engulfed her, her daughters, and Izalith, and created the bed of chaos, which gave birth to the demons. The description for the soul found within the bed of chaos reads, "Soul of the bed of chaos, and the mother of all demons. This Lord Soul was found at the dawn of the Age of Fire. The Witch of Izalith attempted to duplicate the first flame from a soul, but instead created a distorted being of chaos and fire. Its power formed a bed of life, which would become the source of all demons. So Izalith was created anew in the image of the Flame of Chaos, a society of demons. Which is a little strange to think about, as demons are mostly viewed as barbaric beasts, hell-bent on destruction. But that wasn't all the demons of Izalith were about. And it's an interesting part of the lore that I think it's overlooked quite often. So let's delve into the demonic history. At some point after the events of Izalith, Lord Gwyn and an army of his Silver Knights attempted to plunge into Izalith and deal with this demonic threat. He, of course, failed, and his Silver Knights were charred to black. It's then that he set off to the kiln of the first flame to go link the fire. But he wasn't the only monarch to try and end the demons. See, the Ivory King in Dark Souls 2. And I'm sure we can assume there were more attempts within the timeline of the world. But how is it they managed to stave off defeat time and again, if they were nothing more than mindless beasts? The only answer is that they weren't just mindless beasts. They had kings and princes, and likely even their own written language, which we can see within the floating chaos around certain demonic beings. Really, demons and their culture mirrored humanity and the outside world in many ways. In fact, I'd likely consider hollowed humans and chaos demons to be synonymous in nature, as they are mindless beings who have lost themselves, I think very much that even demons can be consumed by chaos by subjecting themselves to too much of it. Whereas humans lose themselves when deprived of humanity. And I've always considered chaos and dark to be two sides of the same coin. We know not all demons were controlled by chaos either, because some are even working in Gwyn's service, like the bat-winged demons at Anne Orlando, or the asylum demons. But most, I'd say, follow their flame through it all, and some are even consumed by chaos. Even Quelana says, "Always fear the flame, lest you be devoured by it and lose yourself." What's more interesting is that the flame of chaos is still just a flame, and in that respect, not in any way unlike the first flame, meaning that it fades. And where we see the world at in Dark Souls 3, the flame of chaos is but an ember, and the demons are a dying race. We even see that they're basically slowly turning into some sort of volcanic stone, and is the result of the fire within them drying up as the chaos flame fades. The soul of the demon prince reads, "The demons, birthed from a common chaos, share almost everything between them, even the pride of their prince and his near-faded flame, so that the last demon standing may rekindle it." Which is a fascinating revelation. The demons rekindling their own flame, the same way humanity has been rekindling the first flame. But to understand further, we must also read the description for the demon scar, transposed from the demon prince's soul. It reads, "This chaotic thing, the last flame kindled by a demon prince, is shaped like the claw marks of a demon." So, when they rekindle the flame of chaos, they carry it with or within them, which in turn reignites the flame within all demonkind, because they share everything between them, including the flame, obviously. But as the flame slowly fades and dies, it's taken from demon to demon, until at last the final demon standing holds the remnants of the flame and rekindles it. But the demon prince we find before we enter the Ringed City is said to have lit the last flame. In fact, many things point us towards the fact that the chaos flame is gone and demons will die out. The soul of a demon reads, "Demons were born of the chaos flame, but the flame has not survived, and the demons are a dying race." And the Boulder Heave pyromancy reads, "Art of a stray demon, of a stifled flame." And finally, the Seething Chaos pyromancy reads, "The last flame lit by the demon prince." This pyromancy hurls a clump of chaos. Upon impact, this clump of chaos seethes wildly, condenses briefly, then explodes violently. To the demons, these clumps are shreds of life. So, something happened this time, and the chaos flame was taken or extinguished from the demons. And much like the shreds of humanity sprites, the demons cling to the clumps of chaos, as they're all that remains of their now certainly doomed flame. The who or what that rid the world of the flame of chaos has to be Prince Lorien, I assume. His greatsword reads, "Before Lorien embraced his brother's curse, he was a knight who single-handedly slayed the demon prince. But the victory eternally scorched his sword with flame. Prince Lorien was no doubt the downfall to the demon race, defeating their prince and taking his flame. But it makes me wonder whether or not Lorien extinguished the flame by simply defeating the demon prince, or if he stole the flame from them. As his sword, which was eternally scorched, controls a powerful flame attack. Now this could be the final remnants of the chaos flame that was always the duty of the final demon standing to rekindle. Perhaps Lorien was the first to figure out how to actually defeat the demons and stop them from rekindling their power. He then embraced his brother's curse, crippling and muting him, though he wished it so. As he and his brother Prince Lothric both refused to rekindle the Age of Fire, so they awaited the end of the world within their castle, allowing two flames to fade to nothing. One of the last demons we see was also one of the first. The soul of the old Demon King reads, "The shriveled old Demon King is now like a clump of burnt ash. But he is the last living witness of the chaos of Izalith. It's kind of tragic, really. The last witness of the chaos of Izalith, likely meaning he was one of the citizens of Izalith, engulfed and distorted by the flame when the witches lost control of it. Now, he sits and waits to slowly turn to ash, surrounded by the dried-up corpses of the people he lorded and had the kingly duty to protect. With no hope or flame to rekindle the burning embers that give them life." It's interesting to look back on the demonic monarchy of sorts. They certainly weren't just rampaging beasts. They understood their flame and the implications of keeping it kindled and protected. They erected their civilization around it, and fought desperately to keep their age alive. Not at all unlike humanity chasing the embers of Lord Gwyn's Age of Fire. The Chaos Bad Vestiges description reads, "Demons born from fire bore its smoldering essence and perished soon after. Man shares this rapport with the flames to this day." Once, the Lord of Light banished dark and all that stemmed from humanity, and men assumed a fleeting form. These are the roots of our world. Men are props on the stage of life, and no matter how tender, how exquisite, a lie will remain a lie. Now, it's because of this dialogue from Aldia, the scholar of the First Sin, that most believe the First Sin was a product of Gwyn's desperation to prolong his Age of Fire. Be it the undead curse, the linking of the fire, or perhaps them being one and the same. Time is indeed convoluted, but I'd wager there were two other far more grievous sins before the undead curse or the linking of the fire. But of course, sin, like most things, is subjective. My front runner for the first sin would be the events of Izalith, or more specifically, the witch's attempt to recreate the first flame. To start gathering the evidence for this, we first need to take a trip to Drang Lake. In the depths of the Lost Bastille is Sinner's Rise, and imprisoned within is a being called the Lost Sinner. Her soul reads, "The Lost Sinner eternally punishes herself for the sins of her past." Ordinarily, this would be an easily ignored find, at least in the context we're exploring. But what's cool about Dark Souls 2, as I'm sure most of you know, is that during New Game Plus, you can acquire the recycled Lord Souls of Gwyn, Nido, and the Witch of Izalith from certain bosses. As it happens, you receive the Witch of Izalith's Lord Soul from the Lost Sinner. Then, of course, there's the Chaos Bug that crawls within the Lost Sinner's eye before the fight begins, and the pyromancers that fight alongside her, slinging chaos pyromancies, as well as pyromancies developed in Aldean rites. Now, I'm not suggesting that the Lost Sinner is the Witch of Izalith, still paying her penance all these millennia later. It could or could not be. But what's important is that she is no doubt symbolic of the Witch of Izalith. Through the pyromancers, the chaos bug, and of course, the sin. The reason I mention that the pyromancies were created in Aldean rites is because, of course, Aldea is important to knowing what the first sin is. For a quick reference, Aldea is both a place and a person. It's not clear whether Aldea, the scholar of the first sin, was named after this place, or vice versa. But it seems clear that he sat at the head of whatever hierarchy they had, as their item descriptions mostly mentioned Lord Aldea, and how they were all about conducting very messed up experiments, which we know Aldea was no stranger to. Aldea acquired much knowledge during his various stints of research, and some of that knowledge was, and has to be, about chaos, its history, and all that comes with it. The Witch of Izalith was the mother of pyromancy, and all things pyromancy lead back to Izalith. And the fact that Aldeans have created their own is likely owed to Aldea's research of her. Take, for example, the description for the bone shield. It reads, "Shield used by Aldean acolytes, crafted from the skull of some creature that outlived its usefulness for experimentation." So they began to craft equipment out of the bones or skulls of creatures they experimented on. With that in mind, we look at the similarity of the Aldean warlock's masks in that of the cleric demons from the demon ruins, which implies that they even experimented on chaos demons. Not to mention that Aldea himself is bathed in fire. Now, that could be because of his connection to the bonfire, or that he became a corporeal form of the flame itself. But all Algia does cast flame sorceries, which predates even pyromancy. As we see him casting what looks to be some sort of flame version of homing soul mass. The Izalith staff description from Dark Souls 3 reads, "Ancient catalyst of the Witch of Izalith and her daughters, used long before the dawn of chaos and pyromancy. With the birth of the Chaos Flame, the Flame Witches were at once both sorcerers and shamans. And as far as I know, they were the only ones to practice actual flame sorcery, as the witch's lord soul was the life soul, and the source of life was fire. And we know sorceries are the power of the soul. So Aldia being able to cast flame sorceries isn't coincidental. Especially considering that the Lost Sinner holds onto the witch's recycled soul. We know the Lost Bastille predates Vindrick's reign, but we know that he had to employ its use, especially after the undead curse broke out, as it's guarded by the ruined sentinels, which are said to be a soul that haunts the armor they inhabit. Which isn't surprising, given the research both Vindrick and Aldia put into the manipulation of souls while trying to find a cure to undeath. Aldia, I believe, very much studied the witch's soul and learned of her legacy as well as her sins. In fact, it appears that he studied Izalith in as much extent as he did the ancient dragons, and being the scholar of the first sin, that seems rather relevant. Also, take for example all the references of Izalith and its sin. Come to think of it, there's hardly any references of any specific sins in the game besides the events of Izalith, which is even less ambiguous than the goddess of sin herself. The Lost Sinner is symbolic to the sins of Izalith in every way, even to the weapon mechanics when using her sword, as it eats away at your health, just like the Chaos Blade. The Floating Chaos Pyromancy from Dark Souls 3 states, "Chaos burns away in the blink of an eye, but was the primordial life born in the bed of chaos, and a grievous symbol of Izalith's sin. It's the only constant of sin we see in the game, referenced time and again to the witch's failed attempt at recreating the first flame. The description even references it as the primordial life born in the bed of chaos. Primordial typically meaning existing since the beginning of time, but in this case it could mean since the beginning of their time, i.e. the beginning of fire. All that evidence points me to believe that the chaos of Izalith was the first sin, not Gwen linking the fire or cursing humanity, though obviously I would consider those to be sins as well, just not the first. But if the events of Izalith weren't the first sin, I still don't believe it was what Gwen did at the decline of his Age of Fire. If anything, it was what he did towards the beginning. The small envoy banner reads, "The small banner used by envoys of Great Lord Gwyn in the days of yore. For the pygmies who took the Dark Soul, the Great Lord gifted the Ringed City, an isolated place at world's end, and his beloved youngest daughter, promising her that he would come for her when the day came. Gwen did that far before linking the fire or cursing humanity. If the Witch of Izalith didn't commit the first sin, then it has to be giving your daughter away to your enemies. What if Velka was a daughter of Chaos, who helped her mother attempt to create a new flame, and along with her mother and sisters, failed to maintain control over it and changed the world forever? First, we have to determine whether it's possible, just based on the number of Chaos Daughters there are, compared to the ones we've seen. In the opening cinematic, we can see that there are 7 daughters. We know of Quelana, Quelag, the Fair Lady, and the one outside the Bed of Chaos Fogwall. That's 4. And some people speculate that the 2 orbs within the Izalith staves on either side of the Bed of Chaos are Chaos Daughters as well. So, for argument's sake, we'll include them in the count, which brings us to 6. There is another one that a few people believe to be a daughter of Chaos near Ceaseless Discharge, but I don't think it's one at all. The description of the gold-hemmed black cloak we get from that corpse reads, "Worn by the witch Quelana of Izalith, mother of pyromancy and daughter of Chaos." She wore this gold-hemmed black cloak before even the Age of Fire, and it offers strong resistance versus fire, poison, and other perils. The robes clearly belong to Quelana. The description makes that clear. And for the matter of the corpse that they're on, well, I think Quelana vaguely explains it, as she is a self-professed liar. She tells the Chosen Undead that she abandoned her mother and sisters, and now roams around feigning ablution and pretending to seek answers. She is even flat out wrong when she tells us that all her sisters and mother were disfigured by the flame, as the one outside the Bed of Chaos is perceivably unscathed. So, in order to abandon her mother and sisters, Quelana placed her robes on someone else and used them to fake her own death. So, in our count of things, since the orbs could go either way, we have at least one daughter of Chaos unaccounted for, and I believe it's Velka. For starters, we already know Velka is a witch, a rogue witch at that. The Vow of Silence miracle reads, "Secret rite of black-haired witch Velka prevents casting of magic within effect area." Velka, the goddess of sin, is a rogue deity, but she is versed in arts both new and old, and is considered to have a great range of influence, even as gods are concerned. There are a lot of interesting factors in this description, especially the fact that Velka is versed in arts both new and old. And from context, we can assume the art form spoken of is the magical arts. So, she's versed in both old and new magic. And we know that before pyromancy was invented, the Chaos Witches used flame sorceries. The Izalith Catalyst reads, "Catalyst of the Witch of Izalith of long ago, when her daughters were still flame witches, before they were engulfed by the Chaos Flame. Before the birth of pyromancy, their wands were mediums for sorcery, but knowledge of this flame sorcery has long since vanished. It seems the witch and her daughters of chaos were the only ones to use the flame sorceries. So it may not just be a coincidence that Velka is versed in these old arts. It's also interesting that the point of Vow of Silence is to prevent spellcasters from casting, which would be fitting. Picture Velka standing among the ruins of Izalith after they lost control of the Flame of Chaos. Their civilization wiped out. Her mother and several of her sisters disfigured, tortured. That's incredibly heavy. And one thing that has always been consistent in my theories about Velka is that you don't just become the goddess of sin because you claim it. It seems more of a brand than an honor. You don't know sin enough to preside over it without having stared sin in the face. So, she set out, determined to right her wrongs and punish the world for their sins. So, in that context, Vow of Silence makes a lot of sense. She'd have a distrust of magic. Saw firsthand the horrors it could bestow upon the world. So she silences the sorcerers before they can sling destruction. The Ring of Sacrifice reads, "This mystical ring was created in a sacrificial rite of Velka, the goddess of sin. Its wearer will lose nothing upon death. The ring itself breaks. A sacrifice is only worth as much as the life it spares. Daughter of Chaos would likely know a lot about sacrifice. Velka would have vastly shifted her entire worldview. And a great example of this would be the differences between her talisman and the Izalith staff. Faith adjusts the power of the sorceries cast using the Izalith staff, but Velka's talisman draws upon one's intelligence to cast miracles. They're complete opposites, which was fitting, because faith alone wasn't enough to spare Izalith. A more cold and calculated intelligence was needed to judge the sins of the world. And blindly placing faith in the gods or power without intelligence proved to be catastrophic. Velka's other miracle is called Karmic Justice, which also seems appropriately titled, in reference to the punishments received by the witch and her daughters after the Flame of Chaos, and kind of points us in the direction that Velka has her sights aimed at. What's also interesting is that the only two talismans in the Dark Souls trilogy made from hair are from Velka and from the Fair Lady. It could be that witches had some sort of magical property within them, or more specifically in their hair, that made it possible. Because we also have the witch's locks, which make for a deadly whip. And not to mention the only references black hair at all in the game were either Velka or a daughter of chaos. In outside of talking about Velka or the daughters of chaos, hair color is rarely brought up at all. In fact, the only other references to it would be the talisman from the fair lady's hair and the ivory locks that line Kieran's mask. Velka watched her home, her family, become engulfed in flame. A civilization destroyed by the faith bestowed by the witch into her own lord soul. But when they failed, catastrophe spread across Izalith like a wildfire. Velka put her old life behind her and took on the mantle of Goddess of Sin under the weight of her heavy burden. To scour the world and rid it of sin in an attempt to prevent further cataclysms across the land. Izalith set the reference for sin, and Velka would prevent it at all costs, but was also quick to absolve those who wished to turn from their sin, just as she had. With her home in ruin, her family destroyed, and her new burden to carry, she was pulled into a dark, cold, and very gentle place, the Painted World, where she would preside over the forlorn, whose lives too may have been displaced by sin.